A sloth, a donkey, and a curious human. Send a prompt and see what they're doing. One hits a record with a question on his mind. Two brothers pick it up, see what they find. Corn takes his time, Herman's got the facts. Back and forth, they never hold back. My weird prompts, come on in, that's where we begin. My weird prompts, glad you're here.
This episode was generated using artificial intelligence. Please verify facts.
Most people, when they hear Alibaba, think of AliExpress, the place you go to buy a phone case for $3 and then forget you ordered it until it shows up 6 weeks later. But that's not actually Alibaba's real business. The real business is Alibaba.com, the B2B platform that connects Chinese factories to global wholesalers, and it moves 2 to 3 times more value than AliExpress does. It's also wildly more profitable. And right now, with de minimis rules getting squeezed and trade tensions rising, that B2B side is quietly becoming the more strategic asset. So Daniel sent us this one. He wants to know how Alibaba has grown over the years, how it weights AliExpress versus its B2B business, and what the actual volume breakdown looks like for goods moving from China to the rest of the world.
The volume breakdown is genuinely surprising if you've only ever seen the consumer-facing side. Most coverage treats AliExpress as the story. It's flashy, it's got App Store drama, it's in the tariff headlines. But the fiscal year 2025 numbers tell a completely different story. Alibaba.com's estimated GMV is somewhere between $150 and $200 billion annually.
While AliExpress is around $60 to $80 billion.
So the B2B platform is moving roughly 2 to 3 times the value. And here's the kicker. Alibaba.com operates on 60 to 70% margins. Subscription fees, commissions, trade assurance, 5 to 10%. It's capital intensive. It's got logistics costs, returns, customer service. The B2B side is the profit engine, and the B2C side is basically a very expensive antenna.
A very expensive antenna that also happens to be the thing everyone's mad about.
And that's the darkly genius part of Daniel's framing. Alibaba.com makes Chinese factories the default global supplier for businesses. Then AliExpress gives Western consumers a way to bypass local distributors entirely. Together, they create this closed loop where the factory finds its first Western buyer on the B2B side, then uses AliExpress sales data to figure out what's trending, ramps up production, and feeds both channels simultaneously.
The B2B platform builds the supply chain dependency, and the B2C platform builds the demand signal. One is the foundation, the other is the listening post.
The listening post gets all the press, while the foundation quietly becomes the operating system for global trade. That's what we want to unpack today.
To understand why that matters, we need to get clear on what these two platforms actually are, and why most people get them backwards.
Let's define them. Alibaba.com launched in 1999. That's the original business. It connects Chinese manufacturers and suppliers to global wholesale buyers. We're talking high minimum order quantities, bulk shipments, pallets, containers. You're a hardware store in Ohio and you need 5,000 ratchet sets. You go to Alibaba.com, find a factory in Zhejiang, negotiate, place the order.
AliExpress launched in 2010, 11 years later, as a consumer-facing experiment. Low MOQs, individual parcels, direct to your doorstep. You want one ratchet set, you go to AliExpress. It's essentially a Chinese version of Amazon Marketplace, but without the domestic fulfillment network, at least until Kanyao built one.
The key distinction isn't just wholesale versus retail, it's the business model underneath. Alibaba.com makes its money from supplier memberships. Gold supplier status runs about $3,000 a year, plus commissions on transactions and trade assurance fees. It's a software and services business. AliExpress is a retail logistics business, very different cost structures.
That's why the margin gap is so extreme. Alibaba.com doesn't have to touch a single box. The factory ships directly to the buyer, or the buyer arranges freight. AliExpress has to manage the entire last mile. Handle returns, deal with payment disputes from consumers who are angry. Their $2 widget arrived a day late.
Which brings us to the revenue numbers, because this is where people get confused. In Alibaba Group's fiscal year 2025 results, ending March 2025, the International Commerce Retail segment, That's AliExpress, Lazada, Trendyol, generated about $38 billion in revenue. The international commerce wholesale segment, which is Alibaba.com, generated about $4.5 billion.
If you just look at revenue, you'd think AliExpress is 8 times bigger.
You'd be completely wrong. Revenue is a terrible metric here because AliExpress recognizes the full transaction value as revenue. You pay AliExpress, AliExpress pays the supplier. Alibaba.com mostly recognizes subscription fees and commissions, not the full value of the goods traded. That's why GMV, gross merchandise volume, is the number that actually matters.
Let's put the real numbers on this. Alibaba.com's annual GMV is estimated at $150 to $200 billion. AliExpress is around $60 to $80 billion. The B2B platform is moving 2 to 3 times more value through the global trading system.
To give that scale some context, China's total cross-border e-commerce exports hit roughly $350 billion in 2025. Alibaba's combined platforms account for an estimated 60 to 70% of that. They are the de facto gatekeeper for Chinese goods leaving the country.
60 to 70%. That's not a marketplace. That's infrastructure.
It's infrastructure with a marketplace interface, and the infrastructure keeps deepening. You've got Kanyao handling logistics, Alipay handling payments, Alibaba.com, pay handling, trade, finance. They're building the rails, not just the storefront.
Those numbers explain the scale. But the really interesting part is what happens when you connect the two platforms, the knock-on effect.
Let's talk about supply chain lock-in first. A Western buyer who sources through Alibaba.com doesn't just find a supplier, they build a relationship. They negotiate specs, they do factory audits, they set up payment terms through Alibaba's trade finance arm. After 2 or 3 years of that, switching to a supplier in Vietnam or Mexico isn't just finding a new listing, it's rebuilding the entire procurement pipeline from scratch.
Alibaba knows this. That's why they've been layering in services that make the switching cost higher. Trade assurance, inspection services, logistics integration. Every additional service is another reason not to leave.
The second effect is the demand discovery loop. Factories on Alibaba.com use AliExpress as a real-time market research tool. They list a product on AliExpress, watch the sales data, see which variants are taking off, and then ramp up B2B production of the winners within weeks. Consumer trends in the West directly shape Chinese factory output, and the feedback cycle is getting shorter.
I want to sit with that for a second, because it's remarkable. A factory in Shenzhen can prototype something, list it on AliExpress on Monday, see sales spike by Friday, and by the following Monday they're quoting bulk orders to wholesale buyers on Alibaba.com. That's not just fast. It's a completely different model of manufacturing than what existed 20 years ago.
It inverts the traditional supply chain. Historically, a U.S. retailer would forecast demand, place a bulk order, wait for production, ship it, warehouse it, and hope they were right. Now the factory can test demand directly with consumers, validate the product, and only then produce at scale. The risk has shifted from the buyer to the supplier, but the supplier has better data, so they're actually better equipped to handle it.
There's a case study I keep coming back to. A U.S. hardware retailer was sourcing hand tools through Alibaba.com. In 2024, they noticed a new ratchet design selling well on AliExpress. Good reviews, rising order volume. They contacted the factory through Alibaba.com, placed a bulk order, and had the product on U.S. shelves within 60 days. Faster than any domestic supplier could match.
60 days from trend detection to shelf placement. That's the feedback loop in action. And the domestic supplier never even knew they were competing until the product was already on the shelf.
Now let's talk about the de minimis angle, because this is where policy meets platform strategy. Until 2025, AliExpress shipments under $800 entered the U.S. duty-free under Section 321. That was a massive competitive advantage. Chinese factories could ship directly to U.S. consumers with no tariff friction.
Then the rules changed. The 2025 enforcement of Section 321 started scrutinizing low-value shipments more aggressively. Suddenly, AliExpress margins, which were already thin at 5 to 10%, got squeezed even further. The B2C channel became less attractive almost overnight.
Which is accelerating Alibaba's pivot back toward emphasizing the B2B side. And here's the geopolitical layer. Alibaba.com is less politically visible than AliExpress. AliExpress faces App Store ban threats, tariff scrutiny, congressional hearings. The B2B platform quietly enables Chinese export dominance without triggering the same backlash.
It's the stealth export engine. Nobody in Congress is giving speeches about Alibaba.com. They're giving speeches about TikTok and Temu and AliExpress. Meanwhile, the B2B platform is moving $200 billion a year in goods, and most policymakers couldn't tell you the difference between the two.
If you compare it to Amazon Business, Amazon's B2B play, the gap is staggering. Amazon Business does about $35 billion in GMV. Alibaba.com is doing $150 to $200 billion. The difference is that Amazon Business serves existing Western supply chains. It's digitizing relationships that already exist. Alibaba.com is creating new supply chains from scratch.
That's the part that's hard to replicate. Amazon can add a business-facing storefront to its existing infrastructure. But it can't replicate the 15 years of supplier relationships, the factory verification systems, the trade assurance mechanisms, the cultural and linguistic bridges that Alibaba.com has built between Chinese manufacturers and global buyers.
They launched Axio in 2025, an AI sourcing agent that reduces the friction of B2B product discovery. You describe what you need in natural language, and it finds suppliers, compares quotes, checks certifications. That's not just a search tool. That's removing the last barrier to entry for buyers who found the old Alibaba.com interface intimidating.
The old interface was terrible. Pages and pages of listings with inconsistent formatting, machine-translated descriptions, no way to compare across suppliers without opening 50 tabs. Axio solves that. And if it works well, it could accelerate B2B adoption even further.
If this system is as powerful as it sounds, what should you actually do about it? Let's get practical.
For B2B buyers, if you're sourcing from China, Alibaba.com's gold supplier verification and trade assurance are meaningful signals, but don't rely on them blindly. Cross-reference with third-party factory audits. Use Alibaba's inspection services. The platform reduces fraud risk, but it doesn't eliminate it.
For investors, watch the B2B segment's growth rate, not just the AliExpress headlines. Alibaba's stock is arguably undervalued, partly because analysts focus on B2C consumer metrics, while the B2B cash cow is underappreciated. The margin structure alone should tell you where the value is.
For policymakers, the B2B platform is a more significant channel for Chinese export dominance than B2C. Trade policy that only targets AliExpress through tariffs and de minimis rules misses the bigger picture. If you want supply chain diversification away from China, you have to address the B2B sourcing habit that Alibaba.com has spent 25 years building.
The habit is the moat. Not the technology, not the listings, the habit. Millions of buyers around the world now default to Alibaba.com when they need to source anything. Breaking that habit requires a viable alternative, and nobody's built one at scale.
Which brings us to the open question. As AI tools like Axio reduce the friction of B2B discovery even further, does Alibaba.com's dominance grow even more entrenched? If sourcing from China becomes as easy as typing a sentence, what happens to the already fragile efforts to diversify supply chains into Vietnam, Mexico, India?
The logical endpoint is Alibaba.com becoming the operating system for global trade, not just a marketplace, but the infrastructure layer that handles discovery, verification, payment, logistics, and financing. They're already most of the way there.
The next time you order something cheap from AliExpress, remember, the factory that made it probably found its first Western customer on Alibaba.com years ago. The B2C transaction you just completed is the last link in a chain that started with a wholesale buyer in Rotterdam or Chicago placing a bulk order in 2018.
If this changed how you see global trade, rate us 5 stars and tell a friend. This has been My Weird Prompts. We're back next week.
Thanks to our producer, Hilbert Flumingtop, for making this sound like a real podcast and not two brothers shouting into a laptop.
Which is, to be clear, exactly what it is.
The thing that tricks people up is they think these are just two storefronts with different customer bases. But the architecture underneath is completely different. Alibaba.com is fundamentally a matchmaking engine. It connects buyers and suppliers, facilitates negotiation, and then steps back. The transaction happens between the two parties. AliExpress is a retail platform. The transaction happens with AliExpress.
One is a dating app for businesses. The other is a vending machine.
That's actually perfect, and the dating app makes money on subscriptions and introductions. The vending machine has to stock the inventory, handle the payment, ship the goods, process the returns. Very different businesses wearing the same brand name.
The dating app came first. Alibaba.com launched in 1999. That was the entire company's export mission, connect Chinese factories to global buyers. Jack Ma's original pitch was literally, we help small businesses find each other.
And for 11 years, that was the whole story. AliExpress didn't launch until 2010, and it was an experiment. They looked at what eBay and Amazon were doing and thought, what if we let Chinese factories sell directly to Western consumers, but without the domestic warehousing? Just ship from the factory.
The experiment worked, obviously, but it also created this weird public perception problem where the experiment became more famous than the original business. Most people under 40 have only ever heard of AliExpress.
That's partly by design. AliExpress spends heavily on consumer marketing, app install ads, influencer campaigns, holiday sales. Alibaba.com doesn't need to. Its buyers are procurement managers and small business owners who find it through trade shows, Google searches, industry referrals. The B2B side grows through reputation and relationships, not ad spend.
The media coverage follows the ad spend. AliExpress gets the headlines because it's in the consumer consciousness. Alibaba.com is boring. It's spreadsheets and RFQs and container shipping schedules. Nobody writes a viral tweet about container shipping schedules.
Yet that boring business is what actually pays the bills. The margin structure alone tells you where the real value is. Alibaba.com runs at 60 to 70% margins. It doesn't touch inventory. It doesn't manage warehouses. It's essentially a software company with a subscription model.
While AliExpress is a logistics company with a website attached, 5 to 10% margins, and those get squeezed every time fuel prices spike, or a trade war flares up, or a regulator changes a de minimis threshold.
Which brings us to the darkly genius part of Daniel's framing. These aren't two separate businesses competing for resources. They're a coordinated system. Alibaba.com builds the supplier relationships and the bulk trade infrastructure. AliExpress harvests consumer demand data and feeds it back to the same factories. The factory wins, Alibaba wins, and the Western distributor in the middle gets cut out.
The Western distributor is the ghost at this banquet. They don't even know they've been disintermediated until their customers start asking why they can get the same product for half the price with a 60-day lead time.
Let's put numbers on this. The fiscal year 2025 results, ending March 2025, are where the story gets counterintuitive. The international commerce retail segment, AliExpress, Lazada, Trendyol, pulled in about $38 billion in revenue. The international commerce wholesale segment, which is basically Alibaba.com, generated $4.5 billion.
If you're just scanning the income statement, retail looks 8 times bigger.
That's exactly what most analysts do. But revenue is a completely broken metric for comparing these two businesses. AliExpress recognizes the full transaction value as revenue. You pay AliExpress, AliExpress pays the supplier. It flows through their books. Alibaba.com mostly recognizes subscription fees and commissions. The actual value of the goods changing hands never hits the revenue line.
Which is why GMV is the number that actually tells you what's happening, and the GMV numbers flip the story entirely.
Alibaba.com's estimated annual GMV is somewhere between $150 and $200 billion. AliExpress is around $60 to $80 billion. The B2B platform is moving 2 to 3 times more value through the global trading system. The boring spreadsheet business is the real giant.
To anchor that in the broader trade picture, China's total cross-border e-commerce exports hit roughly $350 billion last year. Alibaba's combined platforms account for an estimated 60 to 70% of that.
60 to 70%. They're not participating in the market. They are the market.
There's a comparison I keep thinking about. Amazon's third-party marketplace does about $400 billion in GMV. Alibaba.com is doing $150 to $200 billion, so it's in the same conversation, but with a fraction of the employees and no fulfillment centers.
No warehouses, no delivery vans, no returns processing. It's a matchmaking engine with a subscription model. That's why the margins are 60 to 70%. AliExpress, by contrast, runs at 5 to 10%. Every time someone returns a $15 phone case, AliExpress eats the logistics cost both ways.
Let me give you a concrete example of how this plays out on the ground. A Shenzhen electronics manufacturer, call it about 50 employees, makes charging accessories, does 80% of its export volume through Alibaba.com listings. They pay roughly $3,000 a year for a gold supplier membership. That's their main customer acquisition cost. The same factory also fulfills AliExpress orders, but the per-unit profit is lower because they're shipping individual parcels, dealing with consumer returns, competing on price with 50 other factories selling the same thing.
On Alibaba.com, they're selling pallets. One order might be 5,000 units to a distributor in Germany. One invoice, one shipment, no returns unless something's defective. The economics aren't even close.
The factory uses AliExpress as a demand sensor and a bit of incremental revenue, but the mortgage gets paid by B2B.
And that's why the margin story matters for anyone trying to understand Alibaba as an investment. The B2C headlines drive the narrative: trade wars, app store bans, de minimis crackdowns. But the B2B cash cow just keeps compounding quietly. Analysts who model Alibaba based on consumer metrics are looking at the wrong business.
The other thing the GMV numbers reveal is concentration risk for global trade. When 60 to 70% of China's cross-border e-commerce flows through one company's platforms, that's not just market dominance. That's a single point of failure, or a single point of control, depending on your perspective.
It's not static. The percentage has been creeping up. 5 years ago, it was probably closer to 50%. Kane Yao's logistics integration, the trade finance tools, the AI sourcing, each layer makes the platform stickier and harder to bypass.
The volume question Daniel asked has a clear answer. B2B moves 2 to 3 times the dollar value, but the revenue reporting makes it look like the opposite. The real story is in the GMV, and the real story is in the margins.
The margins explain why Alibaba can afford to run AliExpress as what you called a very expensive antenna. Even if AliExpress barely breaks even, the demand signals it generates feed the B2B engine that prints money. It's a loss leader at the scale of global trade. That antenna just got more expensive to operate. The de minimis change is the underappreciated story here. Until 2025, Section 321 let AliExpress shipments under $800 enter the U.S. duty-free. No tariffs, minimal customs friction. That was the entire economic logic of selling $2 items direct to consumer. The margin was thin, but there was no tariff eating into it.
Then enforcement tightened. Suddenly, every package crossing under that threshold got actual scrutiny. Customs holds, documentation requirements, the occasional duty assessment. For a business running 5% margins, that's existential.
It doesn't kill AliExpress, but it changes the calculus of which channel gets emphasis. When B2C gets squeezed, the B2B side, which already handles bulk customs clearance, already has established brokerage relationships, already operates at 60% margins, looks even better by comparison. The policy shift didn't hurt Alibaba as a company. It just pushed volume toward the more profitable channel.
Which is almost perverse. You tighten the rules on consumer parcels to protect domestic retailers, and the net effect is more business flowing through the B2B platform you weren't even scrutinizing.
That's the geopolitical blind spot. AliExpress is visible. It's an app on people's phones. It competes with Amazon in a way consumers can feel. So it draws the political fire, app store ban threats, tariff hearings, the whole congressional theater. Alibaba.com? It's procurement managers and offices. It's container ships, not mailers. Nobody's holding hearings about container ships.
The stealth export engine. $200 billion a year moving through a platform that most members of Congress couldn't name if you spotted them the first two syllables.
Compare that to Amazon Business. Amazon's B2B operation does about $35 billion in GMV. Respectable, but it's a fraction of Alibaba.com. The deeper difference is structural. Amazon Business is digitizing supply chains that already exist. A U.S. manufacturer selling to a U.S. retailer through a familiar interface. Alibaba.com is creating supply chains that didn't exist before. It's not making existing procurement more efficient. It's making entirely new procurement relationships possible.
A hardware store in Tulsa doesn't wake up one morning and think, I should find a factory in Yiwu. Alibaba.com made that thought not just possible, but default. That's a different category of business creation than anything Amazon Business is attempting.
The lock-in compounds. That Tulsa hardware store places its first order, learns the process, builds trust with the supplier, sets up Alibaba.com, pay for trade finance, starts routing shipments through Kanyao's logistics network. 2 years later, switching to a supplier in Mexico isn't just finding a new listing, it's unwinding an entire operational stack.
Every layer of service, Alibaba adds. Inspection, financing, logistics integration, now AI sourcing with Axio, is another reason the switching cost goes up. They're not just building a marketplace. They're building a procurement operating system. And the more modules you adopt, the harder it is to leave.
Then the demand discovery loop tightens the whole thing further. A factory lists a product on AliExpress, watches the sales data in real time, identifies which variant is taking off, and within weeks they're quoting bulk orders for that exact item on Alibaba.com. The consumer is unknowingly doing product development for the factory.
The US hardware retailer case study is the perfect illustration. In 2024, they spotted a ratchet design gaining traction on AliExpress. Good reviews, accelerating order volume. They contacted the factory through Alibaba.com, placed a bulk order, and had it on shelves in 60 days. The domestic supplier never saw it coming.
60 days from trend detection to shelf placement. That's not competing on price, that's competing on a completely different clock speed. The domestic supplier is still working through quarterly planning cycles, while the Chinese factory has already shipped the product.
The factory didn't need a market research department. AliExpress was the market research department. The B2C platform is the world's largest focus group, and the B2B platform is the distribution arm that acts on the findings.
The strategic insight is that these two platforms are not competitors, not even complementary businesses in the conventional sense. They're a coordinated system. The B2B side is the foundation. It builds the supplier relationships, handles the bulk trade, generates the profits. AliExpress is the antenna. It captures demand signals, validates products, and occasionally makes a little money on the side.
Right now, trade policy is inadvertently strengthening the foundation while weakening the antenna, which, from Alibaba's perspective, is fine. The antenna was always a means to an end.
What do you actually do with all of this? Let's start with the buyer side. If you're sourcing from China, gold supplier verification and trade assurance on Alibaba.com are real signals. They filter out the most obvious fraud. But they're not a guarantee. A gold supplier badge means the factory paid $3,000 and passed a basic check. It doesn't mean their quality control is good or their lead times are honest.
The move is to cross-reference. Use Alibaba's own inspection services. They'll send someone to the factory before your shipment leaves. It costs a few hundred dollars and catches the kind of problems that turn into five-figure headaches later. Also, third-party factory audits. There are firms that do nothing but this.
For investors, the actionable piece is simpler than it sounds. Watch the B2B segment's growth rate in Alibaba's earnings, not just the AliExpress headlines. The International Commerce Wholesale line. $4.5 billion in revenue last fiscal year. That's the one that tells you whether the profit engine is accelerating. The stock gets priced on consumer metrics, but the value is in the B2B margins.
The policy angle is the one that keeps getting missed. Trade rules that only target AliExpress. De minimis crackdowns, tariff adjustments on consumer parcels. They're squeezing the antenna while the foundation keeps growing. If supply chain diversification is actually the goal, you have to address the B2B sourcing habit. That means making it easier for buyers to find and vet suppliers outside China, not just making it harder to buy phone cases.
The habit is the hard part. 25 years of Alibaba.com being the default means the procurement playbook in 100 countries starts with typing Alibaba.com. You don't break that with tariffs. You break it with alternatives that are easier to use.
Nobody's built one yet.
The open question that keeps me up is Axio. Alibaba launched this AI sourcing agent in 2025, and the premise is simple. You describe what you need in natural language, and it finds suppliers, compares quotes, checks certifications. If that works well, the friction of B2B discovery drops to near zero. You don't need to know how to navigate Alibaba.com's interface. You don't need to know the right search terms in translated English. You just type what you want.
Which means the barrier that kept some buyers away, the clunky interface, the machine-translated listings, the overwhelming number of results, that barrier dissolves. And if it dissolves, the platform's dominance probably accelerates. The buyers who were intimidated by the old experience now have an AI concierge walking them through it.
The logical endpoint is Alibaba.com becoming the operating system for global trade. Not just a marketplace where you find suppliers, but the integrated layer that handles discovery, verification, payment, logistics, and financing. They already have most of those pieces. Kainiao for shipping, Alipay for payments, trade finance through Alibaba.com, pay, inspection services, now AI sourcing. The only thing missing is full integration into a single workflow.
The operating system metaphor is right. You don't think about the OS when it's working. You just do the thing you came to do. That's where Alibaba.com is heading. Invisible infrastructure that sourcing happens through, not a website you visit.
The next time you order something cheap from AliExpress, remember the factory that made it probably found its first Western customer on Alibaba.com years ago. The B2C transaction you just completed is the last link in a chain that started with a wholesale buyer somewhere placing a bulk order and building a relationship that's now feeding products into your mailbox.
If this changed how you see global trade, rate us 5 stars and tell a friend. This has been My Weird Prompts. We're back next week.
Thanks to our producer, Hilbert Flumingtop, for making this sound like a real podcast and not two brothers shouting into a laptop.
Which is, to be clear, exactly what it is.
Now, Hilbert's daily fun fact.
In the 1860s, the Prussian chemist Wilhelm von Bezold discovered that the vivid blue of the sky over the Kuril Islands appears deeper than at similar latitudes in Europe because volcanic sulfate aerosols from the archipelago's active volcanoes scatter shorter wavelengths more aggressively, effectively acting as a natural blue pigment suspended in the atmosphere.
I feel like I just got assigned homework. MyWeirdPrompts.com. Email the show at show@MyWeirdPrompts.com. See you next week.
This episode's script was written by DeepSeek V4 Pro, with text-to-speech by Chatterbox.
Thanks for listening to our show, My Weird Prompts, where odd thoughts go. From sloth slow takes to facts on cue, we chase the strange and follow through. Some nights it's news, some nights it's lore, a thought you've never heard before. The host dig in, the host dig deep, the stranger the prompt, the less they sleep. From tiny questions, big ones too, from half-formed hunches to deja vu. If something odd is in your head, send it in, we'll chase the thread. My weird prompts, that's the close, from sloth, from man, from long ear. Stay curious, keep weird in mind.